This is an interview on September 30, 1982. My name is Lila Nash, and I am interviewing Thomas R. Wagner, who has been a resident of here for many years. He probably has served on more commissions and more boards and elected offices than anybody else in the town. We'll begin, Tom. I would like to ask you when you came here and where you were born.
I was born in Goshen, Indiana, and my name was Thomas Richard Loomis. My mother had died when I was 3 or 4 years old, and I was adopted by my mother's sister, Frances M. Wagner, and her husband, Ernest O. Wagner, who lived here in Lakeville. And I came here to live with them, and outside of being away for school purposes, I've lived here ever since.
Now, you went to school here?
Yes, I had quite a time at school. When I first came here, I had as a governess Miss Stewart.
Was that Miss Anna Stewart?
That was Miss Anna Stewart. And she was a governess for me and my sister Helen, who was adopted with me. And we gave her so much trouble that she decided she could handle a lot more children and started a private school, which thrived and was very successful. And many, many of the local people who I served the town with graduates of her school. Then I went to Berkshire School at the age of about 13, I think, and got influenza and lost a year. And then I went to the Fessenden School in West Newton, Massachusetts, where after I'd been there a year, they told my parents they'd be glad to have me back, but I'd have to be in the seventh grade instead of the eighth, where I had been before. So I went to the high school here in Lakeville, which was then where the post office now is. And after a year there, I wormed my way into Hotchkiss. And graduated from Hotchkiss 4 years later.
What year was that?
It was 1928. Mm-hmm. And then I graduated from Princeton in 1932.
You graduated from Princeton with a BA degree, right?
Right.
And what did you specialize in, anything there?
Economics, yes.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start your, you first started a general insurance company here?
When my wife, Fran, and I were married on June 24th, 1933, shortly after my adopted mother died. She had just graduated, Fran had just graduated from Vassar. And no two people, ever took a bigger chance than we did. We were both destitute. And I had no job and no money, and it was the heart of the Depression. But we chanced it, and the town of Salisbury has been very good to us.
That's what other schools or whatever, what other universities or schools did you attend? You were an attorney now, aren't you? And
yes, I am. In 1938, Howard Landon retired as Salisbury Judge of Probate because of his age, and a new one had to be elected. And through the kindness of three or four of my friends working very hard for me, I was elected Judge of Probate, and Howard Landon insisted that a judge of probate ought to be a lawyer. And so he wangled me into entering the University of Connecticut Law School in Hartford, to which I drove 4 nights a week for 4 years, 100 miles a night, to get a law degree. And I passed the Connecticut, I graduated there magna cum laude, and passed my bar exam in June of 1943, July.
I see. And you did quite a bit of lecturing too, did you not?
After that, the year I graduated, the University of Connecticut Law School asked me if I would stay on to teach torts in the evening division, which I did for about 12 years, one of the most enjoyable parts of my life.
And I know that you have been town council for over 40 years, is that right?
Well, that's nearly right. You know, I think I became town council right after I became an attorney, so it's probably 38 or 39 years.
I see. And you were probate judge for how long? And
well, I was probate judge for a long time. I don't really recall how long. And it just chanced that because both Sharon and Kamen were without people that they wanted as judge of probate, I was the acting judge of probate in both those towns for a considerable period of time.
Now you have you were not only judge of probate and attorney and town council, and you were also in the insurance business, the general insurance business agency, for some time. But you were you were in a lot of activities as chairman and on the board of trustees. Can you name a few of those?
Well, I can name a few. Of course, the most important one was the Salisbury Cemetery. But I helped organize and was president of the, what is now the Housatonic Psychiatric Center. I was for many years the trustee of the Sharon Hospital and secretary of the board there and on its executive committee. And I served as a trustee of Hotchkiss School longer than any other person, 32 years to be exact, and was also for about 31 of those years secretary of its board of trustees and on the governing board. And then later I became a trustee of the Salisbury School, and I served for I think 14 years and was on their executive committee.
And what other offices did you hold in the town? Did you serve on any town boards, elected boards?
The first town job I had was chairman of the Board of Tax Review, which used to meet about 3 hours a year, but it got me started in local affairs. And then later I became a member of and chairman of the Board of Education, and I've been a justice of the peace for years. And I was president of the National Iron Bank in Falls Village for a long time, and then vice president later of the Salisbury Bank and Trust Company, and remained the director of that bank until I got to be 72 years of age and have to leave.
You were a member of several other orders in town. How about the your church affiliations?
Oh yes, I was chairman of the Society's committee in the old days. Salisbury Congregational Church before it became actually incorporated. And I was treasurer for two long sessions of time. And actually, for 1 year, was superintendent of the Sunday School, which was ridiculous because I never cared anything for children and was not in any way fitted for the job. But those were the days when you turned your hand to anything you were asked to do.
I remember you being superintendent of the Sunday School. Didn't I succeed you in that position?
I think you did, Lila. And you did a better job than I did.
And I'm sure, and you were very cooperative when we gave the Christmas pageant. I remember that I always had you as Joseph.
I loved the Christmas pageant. Mm-hmm. That was, I think, one reason why I stayed by the church. My theory is that the way to keep members of any organization interested is to give them something to do. And if you just expect them to come to meetings and give money, you're going to have a hard time keeping their interest. The church pageant to me was a high point of every year, and it was people like you that made it possible and did all the work. And we had a lot of fun.
Yes, it did. It was very enjoyable. I know I like to do it.
Yeah, it was, the church used to be just jammed, as you know. People from all over.
We had all the members, about 50 in the cast, I remember, that got everybody out to Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one funny episode I remember was when I was Joseph again, and Harold Erickson was the innkeeper. And Harold's mother, Ma Erickson, was sitting in the front pew of the church. And I came up with my bride and my child and knocked on the door to him, and Harold stuck his head out, told me there was no room for him, and his mother burst into tears.
His mother breaks into tears?
Burst into tears.
Oh, burst right? Into tears.
Yeah.
She was so impressed. It was so impressive.
She couldn't bear to have Harold tell Tom Wagner that he wouldn't let him in the inn.
That sounds just like Ma Erickson. How about your welfare programs and all the organizations that have the dealings with that?
You know, that was quite some time ago, and I'm a little foggy about it, but I helped Mrs. Bauer at the time that she started what is now the Pittsylvania Psychiatric Center, and was for some years president of that, and I think I was president of the Salisbury Welfare Association for some years. Being a lawyer in a small town, there are a lot of things you can do to help, and people don't hesitate to ask you.
Yeah, I remember that you also was president of the William Bissell Fund, William Bissell Fund.
For 25 years I was president of that.
You not only served in the town, but in the county. What were you, a member of the Lynchville County Bar Association?
Yeah, so every lawyer is a member of that, and she lives in Lynchville County. And I was treasurer of that for a long time, which simply meant that one of my secretaries kept the books. And for a short while, I was chairman of the grievance committee of Lynchville County Bar. That was a committee to which people went if they felt they'd been mistreated by a lawyer. And it was pretty interesting.
And of course, you probably belong to the Lynchville University Club, do you not?
I've been a member of that forever and a day.
Mm-hmm.
But I never go. At first it was kind of fun because it was started by Mr. Steckel at Market, and the banquets were held in his mansion over there. And I remember that at each place as we sat down for dinner, there was a red rose and a box of chocolates for, to take home to the wife. And they had interesting speakers. But I have not been much of a joiner in my life, and I had enough business-connected meetings so that I never took much part in that type of activity.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about the insurance business that you've been in how you have come to become involved in the general insurance company in the town? Was it?
When I got out of Princeton, as I said, I had no job, and there were no jobs to be found anywhere. And the insurance business was about, either the insurance business or the real estate business seemed to be about the only things to which an ignorant person could turn his hand. So I did start an insurance agency and starved on it for some years until it finally got established. And it has burgeoned and grown. And
it was originally the what insurance company? The
Thomas R. Wagner.
And then
I later, a friend of mine bought the Annie McNeil Company. And we put the two together, and it's now called the Wagner McNeil Insurance Company. And I'm still chairman of the board, or whatever that means.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have gone over all your activity for the past year. Now, do you remember any interesting episodes in your life regarding the townspeople? And I know that a lawyer doesn't talk too much about their clients or their association, but do you recall any funny incidents in the town? And did you, about the townspeople, you must have been very close to all the natives and the townspeople in all these activities.
Well, I have a few amusing anecdotes. I must admit I wasn't personally involved in all of them, or maybe in any of them. But I think that if anything is worth keeping, it's the sense of humor of a small Connecticut community. My favorite story, I guess, is the one about reputedly about Tom Norton, who lived up on the road to Hotchkiss, the top of Montgomery Street. And in the early days, that's where the home for the imbeciles was located, at George Knight's Institute. And there were a large number of handicapped children. I think they were all boys in those days. And one morning, Tom Norton was walking to town to go to the bank where he was employed, I think maybe a president at the time. And here in the Knights Institute was a coal frame. And sitting on the edge of the coal frame was a little boy, and he had a fishing rod and a line. And he was very intent on fishing in the coal frame. And every once in a while he'd give the pole a little jerk as though he was getting a bite. And Tom Norton stopped to watch him, getting more and more amused by the antics of this little boy. Finally, Mr. Norton couldn't stand it any longer, and he said, Sonny, how many have you caught? And the little boy gave the pole another jerk and looked up and said, "Sir, you make three."
Yeah, I remember Tom Norton. He was Uncle Tom. He was superintendent of the Congregational Sunday School for many years. They called him Uncle Tom.
Well, I knew a lot of the Nortons, but I can't keep some of these families straight in my mind anymore. Another story that I really love is about Bruce Ostrander, who lived over east of the railroad in Salisbury, and had a little shack there. I don't know whether he owned it or not, but anyway, he lived there by himself and made a living with a horse and a wagon drawing manure and things like that. And they tell about one morning when he was sitting in his kitchen and the friend dropped in to chat, and the friend was horrified to see that in a frying pan he fried potatoes up on the stove, the wood stove, there was a chicken scratching, and so the friend said, Bruce, there's a chicken with fried potatoes, and he said, "Well, let the damn fool burn it, please."
I remember Bruce Ostrander very well, Bruce and Douglas and Henry. And the story of poor Bruce, he died, but I remember the circumstances of his death. He had a housekeeper at the time, the old lady that was there with him, and one day somebody went in and she sat in a rocking chair knitting, and Bruce was on the floor beside her, and he said, "What is wrong with Bruce?" She said, "I don't know, he's been there since morning," and he was dead.
Well, that of course reminds me of Annie McHugh and her husband. What was his name?
Annie McHugh and cousin Wasaki?
Joe. They say that their sink stopped up, and Joe Wasaki called a plumber to come and check it. And the plumber noticed when he went to check the sink that the dog was lying under it, and he had to go and get a part to repair the crap in the sink. He came back 2 or 3 days later and the dog was still lying in the same position under the sink. And he said to Joe, "Does your dog always lie there?" And Joe says, "Well, I'm damned if I know." And he pulled off and kicked the dog and it was dead as a stone.
That's what happens that's a typical story of all these natives and the earlier people.
Do you remember the man who broke his back in the mine and walked around head over almost double?
Wasn't his name Tompkins?
I really don't recall, but I've always heard that when he died, they strapped him down flat so they could bury him because of in the position he was after his back broke, there was no way of getting him in a coffin. So he was lying in his house strapped to a board, and a couple of friends wanted to spend the night with him and whiled away the time drinking. And sometime early in the middle of the night, the ropes holding the man down on the board gave way and he sat up, and his two friends went through the window without opening it.
Speaking of that, did you ever hear the story about Frank Ostrom, the cabinet maker? Frank, constructed his own coffin.
You remember that?
Yeah. And then he dressed up in his, after he had the coffin the way he wanted it, he dressed up in his Sunday suit and got in and had Johnny Jordan come over and take his picture so that he could see how he would look when he was laid out. These were all original people and with their ideas.
And you remember the roundhouse?
Oh, yes, very much.
And you remember somebody asked the man why he built a roundhouse? Do you remember what he said? He said it was so the cat couldn't go in the corners.
Right. I also heard that say that it was because so his wife could sweep out the place and not leave the dust in the corners. Well, there's a lot of stories like that. Well, is there any anything else that you would like to say? You have some children, do you not? Three daughters, and could you tell me a little bit about them?
Well, I could. I could tell you everything about them, but I don't think that only one of them still lives in Lakeville, and I don't think that they or their lives are really pertinent to this area. Mm-hmm.
Except that it's part of your family, the three daughters, so we'll leave it at that, that you did have a family, and
actually, I should say something about my wife, too, because she's had a very remarkable career. She graduated from Dana Hall and from Vassar College. At Vassar, she was president of the Vassar Church and became very active in some welfare programs in Poughkeepsie, including a thing called Lincoln Center. I remember once her father gave her money to buy an evening dress to go to a party at Princeton with me, and she took the money to take a little girl from Poughkeepsie who had a bad ear, to New York.
And didn't buy the dress.
Never bought the dress. This was like a typical of her life. She was devoted to other people. And perhaps the most remarkable thing about her was that after her three daughters grew up, she started to take an interest in the National Congregational Church, which later became the United Church of Christ. And in a period of 4 or 5 years, she got to occupy the highest lay position in that church in the United States of America. It's a church of millions of people. And she went up to that position like a skyrocket.
Yes, I know.
And she has spoken all over the country, and she has been sent to Hawaii by the church, and she would still be, I think, one of the top people in that organization, except for her conviction that younger people ought to take over these things. And of course, she is really She's the cause for there being Noble Horizons here in Salisbury. I was one of the trustees of the foundation from which the money has come. But she's the one who envisioned it, and she's the one who's gotten it really established and going. And she still is head of their auxiliary. And another interesting thing about her is that I don't know how many years it is now that she has volunteered to help teach the first grade at the Salisbury Public School how to read. And 5 mornings a week, she is at the public school helping with the first grade simply because of her love for children and their devotion to the ideal that when people have been fortunate, they should share that fortune with others. So she's at the school 5 mornings a week, and she's at Noble Horizons 4 or 5 afternoons a week. She is a trustee of Church Homes, Inc., which has 4 or 5 of these homes for the elderly, like Church Homes. And she's a trustee of the American School for the Deaf in Hartford. And we're just don't know anyone who's done more for people, not always officially, but behind the scenes.
I certainly realize that, because I have known her for a long time, and I'm so glad that you brought this up. And I was going to ask you about Noble Horizons, and you have already answered that. And
yes, Noble Horizons is the pride of my life, I guess. It was just my good fortune that John Horace Noble took a shine to me and selected me for the person whom he trusted